What's up, everyone? It's Eric Vessels with Tactiful. Welcome to another episode of Tactiful Tuesdays. This is episode seven. We have to use two hands now. I have my good friend, David Zwang. David, thanks for joining me.
Eric, always good to be with you, man, even virtually.
So, it's always better to be where...
I know, I'm just saying.
With typically a glass in our hand of
absolutely
of some type of libation. But David probably doesn't need any introduction, longtime analyst and content contributor to the industry and consultant, Zwang & Associates. You are the principal. So, I've never been called into the office and berated.
Well, just keep your act together.
Keep my act together, indeed. So, David, Tactiful Tuesdays, this podcast basically is just kind of hanging out and talking about some stuff. We'll have fun. I do want to cover some industry topics, maybe some fun stuff as well. But I know you have extensive experience in the industry, in the graphic arts industry. How have you seen digital embellishments evolve over the years? And what... Are you seeing any trends? Are you seeing things that, have you seen things out there on the road or at shows that kind of tell you what the trends might be going forward for this space?
So, good question. I mean, look, embellishment's been around since, you know, almost beginning of time, for sure since the Egyptians, but, you know.
Exactly. I was just thinking of Frank Romano lecturing me on how they hand embellished things.
Exactly. So embellishment's been around. It's not new. What's new is the fact that it is now digital, because it's always been analog, right? And it's still analog to a great degree, probably more so than digital, I would think, at this point. So, you know, you've got foiling, and you've got stamping, and you've got die cutting, and you've got embossing, and all those things are embellishment, right?
I mean, yep. You
know, and you know, historically, it's been analog. Digital embellishment opens up the door to a lot of new things. Some kind of looking like the old stuff, right? Okay. The analog stuff.
Yeah, the foil.
But over time, I think we're going to start seeing embellishment go beyond just kind of the same but different, if you will. And we're going to find other ways to begin to use digital technologies, you know, with print. Primarily, I think we're going to see it more in packaging than anything else, because that's really where we've seen it in the past. And, you know, it's all about the first moment of truth, man. If I'm going down the aisle and I see something and it catches my eye, I'm going to grab it.
Yeah. The reason that there's a lot of investment there, I think, right, is because packaging is it's very important from a revenue generating standpoint, right? To catch.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, and Joanne Gore taught me this at Printing United in one of her presentations, you know, first you see it, then you touch it, and then the next step is that you buy it. So if we can get people to do that, and we preach that all the time. So I think you're right. I think the more, you know, embellishment really, sometimes people put it in this little category that's way too small. It's really broad. It's anything that you can do to make print stand out more or be more tactile, right, or catch the eye, so to speak, that's an embellishment. That's why we talk a lot about, you know, fifth and sixth color, you know, and doing, you know, clear toners and those types of things, in addition to the foils and all the other stuff. So,
yeah, you know, I think, you know, Eric, you know, the email, right? Email, texting, whatever, has become the lingua franca, basically, right? And the problem with that is, it's gone.
Right.
It's there, and then it's gone. You know, print is probably the more tactile way of for sure of communicating, and I think people are beginning to understand that, and they're seeing it. You know, and it's easy to delete an email. And print, sure, I can throw some print away, but, you know, I get something that looks really good. Even if I don't look at it again, it's sitting on my desk because I think I'm going to look at it again, because,
for sure,
you know, it's something that really means something. It's something you want to hold on to.
Well, there's an emotional attachment to it. And we teach a lot of this in some of our training, is a lot of the psychological aspects to it, right? There's an email or a text typically doesn't emote. It doesn't have but if I get some kind of printed piece that's got like there's an emotional attachment to that, and the tactile component of that is, I think, what does emote that, and it has lasting staying power. So we don't need to. We're too old in this game to be preaching the print is great. Print's not going to die.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
So I want to talk a little bit about, because I know that you work with a lot of print service providers on this kind of stuff. You've got a lot of expertise in process analysis. What are the common inefficiencies that you observe in print production workflows, and how are you helping PSPs to sort of address them? Do you see common themes in types of automations and process optimizations? And what are some ones that stand out for you that are worth mentioning?
So, I mean, look, I've been doing this a long time. I've been in and out literally hundreds, could be thousands at this point. I stopped counting years ago. But I think that, you know, look, most print shops started, you know, it was a mom and pop. They did something, whatever. And then they grew, and they never had a chance to stop and do a clean sheet, basically. I'm going to rebuild this thing, and I'm going to, with all the stuff I learned over the years, I want to rebuild it based on that. And I see that not just in small shops. I see that in multi-million dollar plants. I mean, significant facilities. I don't care how big you are. The chances are you're basically through that same, going through that same issue and those same issues.
So it's kind of like I'm envisioning this over the years, this, what I would call like bolt-ons. Like,
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go in, well, geez, well, that seems strange. Why are you doing it that way? I don't know. That's the way the guy told me I should be doing it. And it's like, well, you know, I could tell you probably why you're doing it that way. I wasn't here 20 years ago, but I could, you know, this plant, but I could tell you why it was. Something happened. Somebody screwed up. Something went bad. And they said, okay, you will now do it this way. And that's pretty much the way it works. Now, you know, in some cases, maybe that made sense. But for the most part, no, it's just stuff that they can't even go back to understand it. But again, going back to what we were saying before, you know, we were living in an analog world. We're now living in a digital world. The tools are different. The processes are different. The reality of how we deal with people and other companies and vendors and partners is different. And, you know, we're moving more to a connected workflow, man. And I don't just mean in terms of print. I'm talking about in life. You know, you look at your phone and it tells you what you're going to do. Even if you don't tell it, it knows where you're going. It knows what you're going to do. That's basically what's going to be happening in throughout most of manufacturing. For sure, in packaging, it's already starting to happen. You know, you go into an Amazon, excuse me, you go into a store, you pick something up off the shelf, you know, and they scan it, or maybe they just know you picked it up. And all of a sudden, that information goes back in, and it starts, and you run into this loop where it's like, okay, we got this handled. Don't you worry about it. In a production facility, process control, understanding what the digital technology can offer you and do for you is big right now. You know, we talk about, you know, labor and you know, what are we going to do? People are leaving the industry, and where's all this, you know, institutional knowledge going, and how are we going to be able to deal with it going forward? And, you know, the answer to that is, well, we're going to use the technology to help us get through 90% of it. And then the other 10% is where we're going to use the skills of the labor force to be able to deal with it, or 80%. Doesn't really matter. But you understand, there's a large percentage of it is going to just, it's just handled, you know. And, you know, people throw out AI, right? Oh, AI is basically the way I look at it. And it's not about AI. Yeah, maybe someday, you know, it'll be there for everything, or for a lot more than it is now. But it's really just about understanding. You got to, and you take it in steps. That's what I do. When I go into a plant, I look at them and I, you know, I say, okay, this is what I see. This is where you are. You know, what do you want to be when you grow up? Where do you want to be? Okay, these are the steps you need to take to get from where you are here to there. And it's not throwing out the whole thing and starting over. It's, you do it incrementally, because at the end of the day, if you're not doing what you do for a living, and billing, you don't even have the money to do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds to me like you go into these bolt-on situations and try to take a holistic look at it. And instead of bolting other things on, you go end to end and say, okay, well, maybe we just need to undo that bolt, or replace it with this system, this process, this workflow. How about automation? I mean, that has been such a buzzword. And you mentioned manufacturing, and I think this is really interesting. It's something that I've been seeing in the industry for a while now, is print for a long time was kind of a craft, right? Like it was it was this bespoke thing that you created, and it was very creative. And a lot of other industries kind of adopted manufacturing processes, automotive plants or anything that's made in mass is manufactured. Has automation pushed print to be more of a manufacturing facility than kind of a
printing? Print was always manufacturing. I mean, yes, it was a craft, but it was always, but it's custom manufacturing. Mm. Okay. It's not like we're making widgets. We're making maybe different.
Unless kinds. You are.
Yeah. Look, if I'm doing transactional print, yeah, that's pretty much, optimal manufacturing. You can automate that. Basically just have the computers.
Talk or the next bestseller that you got to print 3 right. million copies of or whatever, right?
Yeah. And it's the same stuff. It's just, data coming in, data going through it and out. But, you start looking at things that have a lot of variability. And a lot of that variability could be around finishing. It can be around embellishment. It could be around a lot of other types of product features and functions that require special handling. Now, if you go through, and I go to plants, and I would say that as it is in most businesses, 80% of the of your income comes from 20% of your customers, right?
Yep.
Right?
Pareto, yeah.
And if you look at that, you could find that interestingly enough, that 80%, that's the easy stuff to begin to automate. That's, I call low-hanging fruit. And that's when I go into a plant, that's what I look for. I look for low-hanging fruit. Okay, yeah, we know we need to do this. Where do we start? Well, where are we going to get the most bang for our buck initially? And then we'll kind of move it from there. And I think people have to begin to look at their businesses that way. And again, it's not a matter of just, throwing it out and starting over again. That's hard. I think I've run across that once in my lifetime where somebody said, yeah, we're going to just leave this here and we're going to go buy this building down there. And we're going to start this new thing, build it the way we want to. And eventually we'll close this other one that we've been working with and just been paying for all of that. That I don't see that a lot.
Yeah. It's smarter overall to iterate, right? Like,
yeah,
you just take what you know you do well and fix all the other shit. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Figure it out. Yeah. So I'm interested to hear from you because you have a lot of boots on the ground type, you got dust on your boots, as a phrase I think that was just used recently in the news. What advice would you give to companies that are aiming to transition some of their traditional CMYK print and incorporating digital embellishments into what their offerings are?
Well, I think, first of all, it's a matter of, before they incorporate any, they have to understand what embellishment means for them.
It's like and their customers.
What does it mean? I mean, well, it means you can basically get a higher margin for what it is you're delivering, right?
You do it right.
And if you don't get that message, well, the rest of it doesn't mean anything. So the first thing is, right, understand what's the value. Why am I even going to bother doing this? Am I saving money? Am I making more money? What's the advantage, right? Once they get their head around that, well, then it's just a matter of, okay, well, what are the next steps? What do I need to do to make it happen, right? Yeah. And, there's different things. At this point, you can buy digital presses. I remember when Xerox years ago came out with their, I don't know, it was the iridescent, where it had silver and gold and they can swap out color.
Yeah.
Right. And I went into a marketing company and I said, which is cool. What are you doing with this? And they showed me a book with all these pretty pictures that they made specifically utilizing the features of that machine. And I said, well, geez, this is from a pharmaceutical company. This is a, something else. I said, did you ever think about going back to them and asking if you can sell packaging to them. You know, you could put like heavy duty cardstock in there and do all that stuff and make a box out of it. And it's like, the lights went off, man. It's like, whoa, wow, I guess I could do that, can I?
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes you have the tools that you need already there. You're just not using them. We're not thinking about how to use them. Sometimes, and listen, you know, even, and sometimes you don't have the tools, in which case, yeah, okay, so now we need to do something, right?
Yeah. But it's never, one thing I think that gets, it gets kind of twisted for me is like, I see a lot of excitement around equipment at different shows, and right. and I'll hear printers talk, and it's almost like if we just had, you know, that equipment, we could do that thing or whatever. But to me, it's like, it's not just about getting a new piece of equipment. You've got to understand what it can do, how it can right. do it, what right. application, like you spoke about, what applications do your customers have that could be used? So it's right. both, do I have the right equipment? And am I utilizing the current equipment that I have to the fullest degree? And we find on digital embellishments, mm-hmm. even fifth and sixth color, even very simple stuff, right?
Right.
That people aren't using those additional gamuts or those additional tools that they have with equipment that they've already got on their shop floor. They don't need anything new.
People go to shows and they love shiny things. That's why they go. They yeah. like the shiny things, right? And the reality is that, and I get that because I'm pretty much the same when I go out. I go, oh, that's really cool. I want one of those. But that's backwards. What are you going to sell? What are you going to make? What is the value of it to you? Then you go and you make that next step. And that's the same thing with presses. You go buy a new press, you know, well, you know, people come to you, well, I need a new press. What should I buy? It's like, I don't know. What do? You know, start with that first, then go to the shiny stuff, you know?
Yeah. What shiny stuff can deliver on those promises?
Exactly. What do you need to make that work for you?
It really is a brave new world, and we're seeing, you know, we're starting to see more adoption of digital embellishment and utilizing those equipment. Obviously, Tactiful, our mission in life is to really create the digital embellishment easy button. We want to democratize these technologies to where the utilization goes up, because we are seeing underutilization. Part of that, as we've begun talking about it, is to sort of develop some standard ways of talking about things and standard ways of doing things. I know you've been involved and are the chairman of the Ghent Work Group, which has developed standards for lots of things over the years. I want to talk a little bit, and Tactiful actually just joined the Ghent Work Group because we think that standards in the realm of digital embellishment is going to be more and more important as we start to increase that adoption. Talk a little bit about that and the importance of the industry adhering to standards, specifically not necessarily in the realm of digital embellishments, but
standard. Look, the rationale is the same. Whether, you know, one of the things that the industry is afforded from going analog to digital is it makes it easier to move data.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a key, because we're now dealing with data. It used to be, you know, big irons and things, and now it's that we're basically just moving data around. Okay. Yeah. And then we're using that to manufacture stuff. Okay. Yeah. Well, okay, great
stuff.
We've got the data. How do we, and we're doing it across the town, across the country, whatever. How do you get the data in the right form? How do I get the set of instructions to the printer or to the machine itself that needs to deal with it so that it's consistent and so that I don't have to think about where I'm sending it. I just need to know this is what I want. And then I pass it along and I'm sending the instructions along with the content itself. Yeah. And that's really what we've been doing at Ghent Work Group's been around now. It's over 22 years. Okay. And we started by just doing pre-flight. And why was it? And standardizing pre-flight, because, you know, I'm a publisher. I need to put an ad. I have people putting ads in, and I need to know or they need to know how to submit it to me, or I need to know now how to submit that to the printer who's actually going to print this magazine or whatever it is. And depending on which shop you were at, it was like, no, I don't want it that way. I want it this way because that's how I do it. Right. Or no, I want it this way because that's how I do it. Okay.
Nightmare.
Yeah. Well, that was, and that's crazy. So, you know, we've kind of gone through most of that. You know, we still got some holdouts and there's still education and that needs to happen. But the concept and the structure, the infrastructure that we've designed over the years to support that, is, you know, it's been great. So it's been great for the content part of it. And then the question is, okay, so now I want to do other things, right? I need to do folding. Well, how do I show folding? Not so much show it even. How do I instruct a machine that's going to be down the line on how I want as a designer, right? As a designer, how do I instruct it to how to fold it, what I want to fold, how I want to die cut, what I want to die cut. Again, using the same issue, that going back to those same issues again, how do I do it in a standardized way so I don't have to think about where I'm sending it or who I'm sending it to? It's just, I'm a designer, I'm doing my thing, and I'm going to give it to somebody else, and they're going to send it off to their printer for the best price, best whatever the hell the motivation is, right? How do I get the instructions around that through and out? And we started doing that for packaging. Oh, we started talking about packaging back in 2000. We started in 2002. So I would say 2004, we had our initial discussions. And we said, listen, this is going beyond just the pre-flay thing. How do we know things are going to, we know where things are going. At that point, we knew exactly where they were going. They weren't there yet, had a long way to go, but we knew we had to create this standardized way to communicate that information, kind of the process information, not just the content, but the process information.
Yeah, no, and that's what it boils down to me, for me, like the most, you know, easy, basic, like, you know, explain it to me like I'm seven, is you have to talk about a common thing in a common way to be able to do it the same.
Exactly.
Across the board. And now that we've got, I mean, the distributed print model is just so pervasive that you're dead in the water if you can't do that, right? You're not matching, you know, like if you're going to print something in Utah and you're going to print something in Kentucky, you want those things to be the same and consistent across the board.
And let's make it to the next step. Eric, what if I want to print it in Spain or I want to print it in France where the language is actually different as well?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, there's a lot of process stuff that's really important.
So you know, when we create this stuff and we create these standards, we look at it at the basic function, and then you can then adapt your language or whatever to it. But ultimately, the instruction itself is the same.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to be addressing in the digital embellishment space, because what they may call, you know, foil shine, whatever, over here they call it something else, but it's the same thing. So how do we start talking about it?
Exactly.
Well, we're really happy to be, you know, sort of taking a leadership role at Tactiful and trying to make that, because at the end of the day, like I said, the easy button for democratizing digital embellishments, communicating about it in the same way is fundamentally important to be able to do that. So
that's exactly right.
Last but not least, I got one last question for you. I want you to predict the future. What do you envision the next significant challenge for the printing industry or change or adoption or something new coming? And how can print companies prepare to meet that challenge and that change? What's coming?
Well, again, it goes back to the connected, what I talked about before was this connected world we're in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that things like Amazon have gotten people into a mindset. You know, I want something, I go online, I push, this is what I want, give me three of those.
Right.
All of those, right? And I think that the connecting, and we're seeing it already. I mean, you know, I talked a little bit before about transactional, where the computer or the customer's computer is basically talking to the manufacturer's computer and saying, this is what I want, this is how I want it, this is where I want it delivered. And the customer's computer is getting the information in terms of what it actually needs from someplace else, right?
Yep.
And so all of that is happening and flowing through. The things that, and I'm going to bring up something else, which is another topic, but it helps understand why we did what this, and we did a project called the Taxonomy Project a number of years ago, yep. Right? And why was that? Why did we do that? What was that about? And we're getting more and more interested in it now. And I think finally we're going to start seeing it more implemented. It's how do you, getting back to how do you communicate all that information
in the same way?
In the same way across the various disciplines. Okay. And that's really where the Taxonomy Project came into play. So there we're not dealing with, you know, what color do you want it to be? What size box is it going in? Does it need to fold or not? Or maybe it does need to fold. But again, taking that information and bringing that in. So now we're dealing with the business end of it as well as or beyond just the production end of it and the design end of it.
Yeah. No, it's a common theme, it seems. And it revolves around standardization, taxonomy, speaking about it in the same way so that everybody can understand it. And I think it goes from production all the way through to customers and designers. Like, right. how is everybody talking about this and understanding it? All right, last but not least, go to cocktail right now. What are you having?
Oh, it's a little too early, but
no, I'm not saying have it now.
Well, sometimes I wouldn't have said that, but no.
What is your go-to cocktail right now?
What you know, I'm a tequila guy. I have been for decades.
For sure.
That doesn't mean I don't drink other stuff. I'm an equal opportunity drinker, but tequila is my go-to, and I'll probably have my go-to tequila drink later, which is basically a little mezcal, a little tequila, a lime, maybe some fresh raspberries, and just a splash of tonic, just a. This much, that's easy for me. But next week I'm going to Lisbon, so I'll have to drink port, and I know once I go overseas, getting good tequila is difficult. So then I drink gin or.
I know you find all the places though. You find all the places. You're the reason that I understand how to pronounce the word Oaxacan.
Oaxacan, yeah.
The old Oaxacan old fashioned.
Yeah.
David, it's been a pleasure talking to you, my man. It's always great. I don't know how in the world almost 30 minutes could go by, but I do know how because I've been at a bar and 3 or 4 hours have gone by.
I was going to say, yeah, we spent more than 30 minutes together.
It's easy. Good talking to you, my friend. Thanks for being on Tactful Tuesdays, and I look forward to seeing you soon this year sometime.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thank you. It's good to see you. Peace. Yeah.